Session number 10133.
Mr. Weatherly, real for?
Yeah, I was saying it was always Christian names, unless a big party of you were together. I mean, as a closely knit community, so close indeed, and on many occasions there's just you and the boss, he can't call you sergeant and you spring to attention when there's just you and he all the time. But whenever there was a get-together of all the BLOs in the area, and we all had to go up and meet up at an Attlee or somewhere like that, and there might be a dozen radio operators, and there might be two dozen officers and others, then, yes, to the colonels, it was sir. But Eddie Myers, his operator was Stan Smith, and I've heard him call his operator Stan on several occasions. And in that respect, we got on very, very well together. It was... sir, occasionally, but always Christian names. Now I've wandered off your question, which was...
How did you come into contact with him, first of all?
Yeah, well, when he first went in on their operation, I always remember that, because I worked the lads from Ruston Building on several occasions, and they were Harding, Harding being the code name of their the initial operation, which was to go in and look for these... three big viaducts on the main supply route through the Balkans to North Africa and blow one or two or all. When I got in, I knew Len and Dougie very well from Boys Company days pre-war and the other occasions I'd met them during the early part of the war. I didn't know the officers, but when I did eventually meet up with them and met Eddie Myers, met him up at an Attlee. He was a great man for walking around and visiting the missions too. The very nature of his job was such that he had to get around and meet the ELAS chiefs on various occasions. And then politically, things, when they started going wrong, he was all over the place arranging meetings and conferences. And if he had to contact or for some reason get in touch with any of the people in our area, like Psaros or Catalis or later on Nicky Forrest and others, the local BLO, if he was in the area, would go along, and I met them that way. I liked Eddie Myers. He was an old-time regular, and most of the pre-war officers, you could well, they knew their jobs.
Could I?
Yeah. I was going to say, after the war, our first... get together in the Special Forces Club. I met Eddie and we spent the evening together. He introduced me to his wife, who had been a fanny during the war. And we had quite a pleasant evening, reminiscing the old days in Greece and talking about things that we'd done and seen and people we knew. I liked Eddie Myers. He was a nice fellow.
Could I ask you the same question about Colonel Woodhouse?
Chris, I didn't meet Chris all that often. I met him, I met them all, but I didn't meet him well enough to sort of give an opinion, because he was a great Greek scholar, and his job, as was Eddie's, was with the powers that be, the either the leading officers of the field Antartes, or the leading officials in the political section, or EAM. So he had to spend most of his time with them. And whenever we were called up, they were both actively engaged in that sort of thing, which was the reason we were there. And I just made my way over and spent my time with the operators. I didn't meet him as often as I met Eddie Myers. But I did meet him on one or two occasions. He was a don. He was a scholar.
Could I get the chronology straight... of your time in Greece, because you initially dropped there in April 1943. You came out to Izmir in summer of 1944, and then when did you go back into Greece?
Summer of 44. I mean, what, a fortnight after I came out, I was in.
As quick as that?
Mm. Yeah, to a different area. I went in as operator to Ken Ellis.
Can you describe how you went in the second time?
Yes, I flew in. They decided that rather than have all these drops, if they could land planes, especially for pickups to fly people out, it would be that much quicker, a lot safer. So, and would say trudging across country to get a sub. So they built the airstrip at Nerida. And so well was it done that when the RAF first flew over and took photographs off, they couldn't find it because it was covered with young saplings, which, yes, which they actually cut daily, 10, 12, 15 miles away from the airstrip, came along, put them down, and left them there maybe 24, 48 hours, as much for German ideas as the RAF. When they realised that it was covered, they came back a second time when they had been taken down and suggested that it should be lengthened and levelled, but it was a damn good job, and it was eventually used continuously right to the end of the war. And they would land planes there, and one didn't need to drop it anymore. If one sort of were at the extremities of the country, it would be quicker to drop them in, and people were still dropping right up towards the end of the war. But if you were within, say, 100 miles, you'd land there and walk.
We should say that we've found the location of Nerida in central Greece, in the area of Tricola.
That's right, yes. Anyway, I came back there and then went to the station that was run by Major Ellis. Major Ellis and Paddy Lamb, Ken Craven, one or two others, whose names I've forgotten. I was only with them for, let me see now, everything blew up in our face about September, so it was only 2, maybe 3 months. The Germans started withdrawing, the ELAS started flexing their muscles, and we made down for the towns, and we ourselves went right the way down, and we walked down to Larissa. And We stayed in Larissa and watched the British troops come in, and I remember they came in and we were all standing there shouting, and said, about bloody time you arrived, and a cheek pulled up full of parabods, and said, who all said that? I said, I did. And he said, are you British? I said, yeah. He said, where do you came from? I said, I came in by parachute. And we became very, very friendly with them. They stayed there for a while, and then the open rebellion and civil war started, and we were hustled up to Salonika, and from Salonika we stayed there and then were eventually taken out.
Is that what you mean, is it the civil war what you mean when you say everything blew up in your face?
Yes, because as you know, they had a go at the Brits in Athens and took a lot of British prisoners, and some of the lads didn't survive, and we were worried from the messages we were getting from Cairo that it was going to break out all over Greece. Luckily it didn't. Cairo had decided that certain people from certain areas would make for Athens prior to leaving the country, others would make for Salonika, and we were part of those that went up to Salonika. We got up there and the 4th Indian Brigade were there, stationed there, the Gurkhas, 4 Brigade artillery and whatnot, and we, 30, 40 people, were under their protection until such times as it got so bad that they eventually decided that they would get us out, and out we went.
But in Salonika, when you were there, did you see any civil warfare taking place?
No. No, there were isolated cases, isolated instances, but Johnny Gurkha was wandering around and cutting down fairly thick poles with his cookery, rather kept the lid on the simmering pot. And as I say, the artillery were there, and they had been taken out of Italy, and it was a rest station, and I think it was just as much an active station as would be if they'd gone to a rest period in Italy, because it was operational all the time for them. We were quite safe. One of our group had been operating in Salonika, and when we got up there, we all made our way to the SOE house, and we stayed there until we were told to board a certain vessel and get out.
What was the SOE house?
One of the groups towards the end had moved down into Salonika itself and had taken over a house. And upstairs they had the radio room, and downstairs they had the big mess hall, and we all made for that.
Did you leave Salonika at the end of 44 or the beginning of 45, do you know?
I think it was late September 44, October 44, something like that. I got home, I went out to Egypt. It would be about October time of 44.
Because the reason I ask you is because the big clashes in Athens, I think, occurred in December 44.
September, didn't they? Oh, no, the troops came in this September. No, it was later. It was late part of November, early December. You can check quite easily, because one of our group that was taken out of Athens when the Civil War started was shot and killed on Athens airport, and he'd been up in the mountains all the time. An Australian that went up into the hills when the troops withdrew had gone right the way through the war there in Athens, blowing up this and doing some really good work, getting himself decorated. A letter was sent to his parents early on that he was still alive, and he gets killed by the bloody Greeks on the airport at Athens when the Civil War started.
So did you leave before or after all the trouble in Athens towards British forces?
I couldn't say when the Athens trouble started, you see, because we weren't in communication with Athens and we didn't know that the war was started. All we knew was that we were suddenly told to withdraw from Salonika. And when we got back to Egypt, of course, we knew that the actual civil war as such had started.
You said how rough living conditions could be in Greece. Can you illustrate it in any way?
Well, the humorous one that immediately comes to mind was there hadn't been a drop for a while because of the weather, and but the very nature of the job was you sort of couldn't walk around with stacks and stacks of underwear and changes of uniform and clothing. We just had what we wore and a couple of changes, and you couldn't always wash and keep that clean because you're on the move all the time. And then there was this drive by the Germans, and we made for the tall timber, and we went right up into the snow line, and we were hiding up in what had been a sheep pen to keep out of the wind and stop for a couple of radio skeds and things. And we started scratching, and we suddenly discovered we'd got sheep lice. The place was alive with them, and our clothes were riddled with them, and we just couldn't get rid of them. And Jeff said, send out a message, get something in. So double transposition again, sending this message out, telling them what had happened, and the message comes back that they would be dropping in some concentrated Lysol tablets, that we should shave all the hair of the body, that we should use these Lysol tablets in water, apply it to the affected parts, and everything in the garden would be lovely. And they sent these things in, and they were like gelatine, a sort of a little glutinous tablet of an inch in diameter and an inch thick. But they gave no instructions on how they were to be used. So we thought, right, we've got to put these in with so much water and apply the affected parts. And the funny thing was that Jeff and I, it was just Jeff and I at this time, we decided that this is what we would do, but we wouldn't do it until we got a new change of clothing. New underwear, new uniforms, down we go to the local stream, and luckily it was in nice weather because we'd made our way down, and it was sort of late springish. And I had my pint pot, Jeff had his pint pot, enamel pot that we carried around with us. And I put one of these tablets in, filled it with water, stirred it all up into a thick white mixture. You couldn't call it liquid, it was almost solid, but it was mixed. and squatted down on this water and splashed it over to my private parts and leapt 20 foot. It burnt immediately, and it burnt, and I peeled and shed skin, but it was so painful I leapt straight into the water. And we afterwards discovered that these tablets had to be mixed with 28 gallons of water, and I'd mixed it with one pint. But I might add, they got rid of the sheep lice.